In a 1982 essay entitled Stadt mit Umsteigen, East German writer and columnist Heinz Knobloch directed his reader's attention to what was then a hidden interchange tunnel linking the two Stadtmitte U-Bahn stations of Cold War Berlin. Imploring them to pause at the western exit of the Stadtmitte station on what is today the U2 line, Knobloch asked his readers to focus their gaze on a discolored area in the floor and join him on an imagined excavation. He writes, "If we put ourselves in the role of Howard Carter, the archaeologist, if we make his persistence our own, if we pause curiously at the western exit of Stadtmitte and look hard at the ground, we can look right through it. We can do this without a sound. We need no pneumatic drill, no pickaxe, no digging crew. We do not even need to ask permission. The concrete ceiling dissolves and disperses like smoke, not in a flash, but gradually as we reflect. Now the steel beams below the concrete are yielding to memory and move aside. We can see stairs." Like Sigmund Freud, Walter Benjamin, and Michel Foucault, Knobloch recognized the power of archaeological metaphors and their ability to uncover hidden narratives and buried memories. His words dug at the city's subsurface, uncannily revealing a forgotten place, which, to paraphrase Friedrich Schelling's famous words, came into the open as something long familiar to the psyche, having only been estranged through acts of repression. Knobloch then leads his readers from the busy station where their excavation had begun towards its lifeless twin at the other end of the interchange tunnel. He continues, "And below where the stairs end, a passage begins. It extends further than the eye can reach, but now the eye does reach further. It gazes deep into the underground passage. Every passage lures us with its ending, especially when no ending seems to be in sight. At the end of this very long passage comes another staircase. Perhaps movie posters still line the way. Finally, you come to a few more stairs, and if you go down them, you find yourself standing in an underground station that is also called Stadtmitte." This Stadtmitte station, laying on the U6 line, was one of Cold War Berlin's so-called Geisterbahnhöfe, one of its ghost stations. These were the stations that were forced out of service following the construction of the Berlin Wall in 1961. The wall dissected 12 of the city's municipal railway lines, transforming 17 separate stations on the north-south S-Bahn line and along the U6 and U8 lines into infrastructural points of tension between two opposing political regimes. The reasons for such tension lay partly in the peculiar way in which the operation of Berlin's municipal railways had earlier been divided between city authorities in the west and the east. The administrative division of the BVG, the city's public transport authority, in 1949 followed the earlier division of the Berlin magistrate and saw responsibility for the operation of the U6 and U8 lines, which ran from north to southwest Berlin, retained by an entity which became known as BVG West. However, the management of 12 intermediate U-Bahn stations on these lines that lay beneath East Berlin were handed to a newly formed BVG East. The S-Bahn network, meanwhile, had been operated as a subsidiary of the East German State Railway since the end of the Second World War. Calls for West Berliners to boycott the network as a political gesture and in order to withhold foreign currency from East Germany began in the 1950s. They were, however, only truly taken up following the construction of the wall, which created an improbable scenario where an isolated Western S-Bahn network that only briefly passed under East Berlin was operated by the East for the West. The boycott, buoyed by popular slogans like "every West Berliner S-Bahn passenger pays for the barbed wire," persisted throughout the Cold War for 25 years and was so successful that the East German Railway was forced to decommission over half of its S-Bahn track in West Berlin, leaving numerous surface-level stations to slide into a ruinous state. Some, like those positioned along the stretch of track now known as the Siemensbahn, continue to slide into obsolescence today. Meanwhile, from 1961 until 1989, those centrally located U-S-Bahn stations that lay under East Berlin became bypassed places. They were closed and secured in order to prevent illegal border crossings, even as their routes continued to be used for West Berlin passenger traffic. They were patrolled by East German border guards and transport police. These sentinels, like the pillars that lined the station's platforms, cut spectral figures that were occasionally glimpsed by the West Berlin passengers of passing trains that were required to pass through the stations at their maximum speed. Above ground, access to the GO stations was blocked off so that it could not be used to reach the trans-sector tunnels. Collective amnesia about the stations was further facilitated by the removal of their street-level signs and their omission from East German maps. In time, it became difficult for those East Berliners without prior knowledge and memory of their existence to locate all of the stations and their entrances. Those who moved to the city after 1961, for example, often struggled to explain the sounds that emanated from the rumbling trains traveling beneath their feet. It's perhaps surprising, then, that Knobloch's essay escaped censorship, and in places it's possible to discern a thinly veiled critique of the Cold War's geopolitical status quo. For example, he writes, "Let's take a good look at this underground crossroads. If you want to change trains, you must not go up to the Earth's surface. You should simply walk through the long tunnel to the other train line, from Stadtmitte to Stadtmitte. I ought not to put that in present tense. Here, in the two Stadtmitte stations under the soil of Berlin, is an international border, the other equator. As a child, I planned one day to walk to the ends of the Earth. And why not? Now this dream has come to pass of its own accord. The ends of the Earth lie at our front door. Enjoy it if you can." Perhaps the essay's publication was tolerated because of the buried memories that it invoked. Those memories that are not only physically concealed in the spaces below the city, but are also publicly underrepresented, buried within or by other renderings of the past. For example, Knobloch's words brought to the surface memories of how the Stadtmitte interchange had been used by the remnants of the Nazi high command in an attempt to evade capture by the Soviet army during the first days of May 1945. It recalls how they made their way past throngs of civilians and wounded soldiers, sheltering in the U-Bahn's tunnels as the battle for Berlin raged above, subtly reminding its readers of the Soviet Union's victory and the dangers of fascism. But Knobloch's essay not only brought to the surface buried memories of Berliners' wartime suffering, it also encouraged its readers to cognitively explore the hidden infrastructural connections of the divided city and its transport network. And following its first publication in West Germany in 1984, did this regardless of which side of the wall its readers were on. Ultimately, however, Berliners, East or West, would have to wait until the fall of the wall before they could carry out such explorations in the flesh. By this time, the architectural fabric of the GO stations had slipped into deep decay, creating a series of networked ruins, dormant and timeless places lying within webs of still functioning transport routes. A number of photographers attracted to the ruined aesthetics of the GO stations were amongst the few individuals lucky enough to explore them in their derelict state. Many did so illegally, accessing the stations when they stood open as construction sites during the preparations for their return to service. Their photographs still index the station's ephemeral and fragile materiality. Those taken by Rolf Zollner of Stadtmitte GO station and its interchange tunnel foreground historical traces of August 1961, and in particular, the posters that Knobloch predicted would still be lining the walls. The rediscovery of Berlin's GO stations also created opportunities for these previously out-of-bounds places to host contemporary theatrical productions. East German playwright Michael Peschke took advantage of the particularities of reunification that provided these opportunities and used the Potsdamer Platz GO station as the setting for a play called Straße aus Papier. The play, which was set against the backdrop of the First World War, was promoted as an eerie encounter with the ghosts of the past, and later described in the press as a revolution's cocktail of corpses, prostitutes, and guns. It was performed over a number of weeks in June and July 1990 before major repair works to the station commenced. Given the extent of repair work needed, the Potsdamer Platz station was in fact the last GO station to be returned to service in March 1992. Many of the others became operational again far more quickly, thus limiting the opportunity for them to be experienced in their ruinous state. The first GO station to reopen, Jana Witzbrücke, did so just 2 days after the wall fell. On that day, thousands of East Germans queued for hours outside the station, eager to use the U8 line to reach parts of the city that had been denied to them since 1961. At first, they passed through a makeshift ticket counter and border checkpoint, but after just half an hour, overwhelmed officials gave up scrutinizing identity papers and taking payments for tickets. Further GO stations were reopened on the U6 and the U8 in late 1989 and early 1990, but the vast majority, including Stadtmitte, were reopened on the 1st of July 1990. The choice of date was not accidental. It was the same day that the German Economic, Monetary and Social Union came into effect, the first of four accords that officially brought about unification. The spectacle of that day saw large crowds, including film crews and dignitaries like the mayor of East Berlin, congregate on the platform of the former Alexanderplatz U8 GO station to celebrate its reopening. In this way, the reopening of the GO stations was leveraged in order to create new, reunited collective identities and memories for the city. Since then, the interchange tunnel connecting the two Stadtmitte stations has been further refurbished, so that if one walks along it today, it's hard to imagine the place that Knoblauch attempted to conjure in the minds of his readers. The place of his essay is once again out of bounds, separated in time rather than in space. Following the GO station's reintegration into the functioning transport network, the photographs taken of them in the few months after the fall of the Berlin Wall have come to serve as one of the few means by which to recall them in their derelict state. Amongst the most well-known of such photographs are those taken by Michael Richter, which feature in a book first published in 1992, accompanied by a number of texts written again by Knoblauch. That book has proven so popular that it is now in its eighth edition. Then there are the photographs taken by Christian Halbrock, which appear in an exhibition dedicated to Berlin's former GO stations, displayed in Nordbahnhof, itself a former ghost. This exhibition, which opened in 2009, marked the 20th anniversary of the fall of the Berlin Wall and was the outcome of the Berlin Senate's stipulation that the wall's historical impact on the U and S-Bahn network should be explained to present and future visitors and passersby. The relegation of Berlin's Cold War GO stations to the pages of books and the interpretation panels of exhibitions might help explain them to wider audiences, but ultimately they can no longer be experienced in their spectral state. Still, their rediscovery and the popular fascination that they triggered served to create conduits for the remembrance of other dormant places beneath the city's surface, whose ruinous state outlived the 1990s. Amongst these was one of the city's oldest networked ruins, the Oranienplatz U-Bahn station that was partially built in 1921 as part of the U8 line, only to become obsolete when the line's route was changed a few years later in order to provide an U-Bahn connection to the Wertheim department store at Moritzplatz. It can be considered an example of what American artist Robert Smithson has famously called ruins in reverse. Buildings, Smithson argues, do not only fall into ruin after they are built, but also rise into ruin before they are built. The station's interrupted construction has thus left it citing an abandoned set of futures. Instead of life as an active transport node, the future it inherited saw it and its adjoining tunnel used first as a civilian air raid shelter during the Second World War, and then later its conversion into a transformer station for a West Berlin's electricity provider. The station lay under West Berlin, but its tunnel ran north across the sector border, meaning that here the Berlin Wall was built beneath as well as above the city's surface. In fact, this section of wall still stands as insurmountable as always, dissecting the remnants of the air raid shelter. After the city's reunification, Oranienplatz station was rediscovered and explored, much like Berlin's Cold War GO stations. The pinnacle of its public rediscovery saw it included on a tour organized by the Berlin Underworlds Association that formed in 1997. However, the tour was canceled in 2012 amidst concerns about the station's structural safety, and in 2015, the station was filled in to increase its load-bearing capacity in order to allow greater road traffic to use the street above. But even with these events, the city has still not given up all of its subterranean specters. Berlin's reunification not only led to the loss of the city's Cold War GO stations and the revelation of older dormant underground places, it also created new networked ruins. Following the Cold War politics of infrastructure that resulted in the boycott of the Western S-Bahn network, the transport planning of West Berlin promoted U-Bahn as well as road construction. From the mid-1950s onwards, an ambitious plan was embarked upon to extend the West Berlin U-Bahn network to cover 200 kilometers of track. Achieving this target relied partly on the resurrection of plans to build an U-Bahn line that would connect all others, plans that originally dated to the 1920s. Sections of this line had been preemptively constructed in the 1930s, and in the 1970s, further sections were built in connection with motorway construction and the expansion of other U-Bahn lines. Much of the U10, as the proposed line later became known, was planned to run parallel to one of the few sections of the S-Bahn still functioning in West Berlin. As a result, when the West Berlin S-Bahn was handed over to BVG West in 1984, the plans to construct the U10 were shelved and the rehabilitation of the West Berlin S-Bahn network prioritized. German unification sealed the U10's fate, leaving its incomplete vestiges to index Berlin's geopolitical division and the cycles of politically driven investment that this gave rise to. The investment ruins of the Phantom U10 line linger, removed but not forgotten, amputated but still felt, behind closed doors at stations like Innsbrucker Platz, Potsdamer Platz, Rathaus Steglitz, and Schlossstrasse, waiting silently to be visited. When they are, they do not disclose the same sorts of hauntings and memories associated with the city's Cold War ghost stations. How can these stations truly be ghosts if they've barely lived? Those who do find themselves in these spaces are confronted by spacious cubic caverns, naked concrete skeletons without any of the elements usually expected of functioning underground stations, but equally without the dereliction of those that have long ago been abandoned. Rather than palimpsests of the past, these spaces most closely resemble blank canvases on which to project possible futures. The deep track trenches, overhanging platform edges, and concrete pillars all hint towards the station's planned function, but otherwise, the imagination must fill the void. To do this, one might cling to the rare historical markers that do exist within these spaces' sparse biographies, such as their temporary use to store reserves of medicine and canned food for West Berliners, given the concern that a Soviet blockade of West Berlin might return. One might otherwise prefer to embellish the minor archaeological traces that indicate the station's earlier moments of fleeting human occupation, such as the graffiti that testifies to the previous visits of a group going by the name of the U10 Ghetto Kids. Alternatively, the task of constructing memories and micro-narratives to fill a space that otherwise lacks a collective life story can be deferred to artists. This was explicitly the case between 2009 and 2011, when the Neue Gesellschaft für Bildende Kunst organized an art project dedicated to the U10, called the U10 From Here to the Imaginary and Back Again. One of the contributing artists to that project, Roland Borden, in his work The Kronos Project, demonstrated how the empty spaces of the U10 lend themselves well to the imagination of fictitious yet fantastical memories. Borden's artwork unearthed archive material, like this photograph, which related to a reverse time travel experiment that took place in 1926 in the U-Bahn tunnel and the U-10 tunnel section at Rathaus Steglitz station. The experiment contributed to the development of a deceleration railway that slowed the passage of time within a converted U-Bahn carriage known as the Kronos machine. The 8 volunteers who entered the Kronos machine expected the experiment to last 1 hour, although this equated to a period of 10 years for those scientists monitoring the experiment from the outside world. Initially, the experiment was a success, but unfortunately for its participants, it was discontinued after the rise of the Nazi regime and then forgotten following the death of its leading scientists. Bolden's forays into the archives, in fact, suggest that the experiment might still be underway, even if it remains difficult to pinpoint the location of the Kronos machine because its slow-moving time travel renders it invisible. According to Bowden's calculations, the converted U-Bahn carriage has traveled around 317 meters along the sealed U10 tunnel, placing it somewhere around 150 meters south of Schlossstrasse U-Bahn station, around the spot where the line intersects with the active U9. The close vicinity of fast-moving U9 trains might be enough to dissuade anyone from attempting to track down the Kronos machine today. And this may also explain why Bowden's attempts to acoustically contact its passengers, who by now have been participating in the experiment for around 5.5 hours longer than expected, have so far failed. Now, the imagined history created by Bowden's artwork now sits alongside a whole host of buried memories that can be traced in the infrastructural landscapes of Berlin's municipal railways and their past and present ghosts. memories of expansion and destruction, of division and reunification, and much, much more. But of course, these very memories and the broader patterns of networked remembrance to which they connect are not limited to the abandoned margins of the U and S-Bahn's post-war landscapes. As this evening's other presentations have already testified, such memories can adhere to all railways, not least the Berlin-Baghdad and Hejaz railways that are the main focus of this event. The contemporary ghost stations of some of these, the latter railway, exposed and adrift within their surrounding deserts, as captured in the photographs of Ursula Schultz-Dornberg, seem to be thousands of miles, both literally and metaphorically, from the voids encased in Berlin's subsoil. But still they share in common the potential to return from dormancy, just as Berlin's Cold War ghost stations did, and as the vestiges of the U-10 still might. In the meantime, the recovery or even invention of their buried memories is a matter of digging deeper, and to return to the words of Knobloch one final time, looking harder. Whether this is achieved by excavating their traces in the earth or the archives, by giving oneself over to deep thought or deep trenches, the objective to disclose the hidden narratives behind our socio-technological infrastructures, in a bid to allow them to bear witness and comment on us as human beings, is a worthy and important one. Thanks for listening.